Bradley Basker. Stats Adam.
Live from the K-Word Studios here at Washington University in St. Louis. Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad. Brad Lewis is away this week again. Let's win a game.
Hi, Dr. Jeff here.
What's up, Milo?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Join the Facebook page, Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad.
It's Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad, with Brad and Stats Adam.
And welcome another edition of Bedtime Sports with Brad and Stats Adam, coming to you live from the palatial, modernized, renovated K-Word Studios here at Washington University in St. Louis. My name is Bradley Basker, your co-host alongside Stats Adam Lowenstein. With our first official show of the semester under the new K-Word schedule, we've had a couple extra just because we do it for the love of the game. But now that the K-Word schedule has been finalized, this is our time slot, Fridays 2 to 3 Central Time, 3 to 4 on the East Coast. I like this slot, Stats, and you probably agree. We get to kind of recap the week that was, but also look ahead to the weekend. I think it's a natural opportunity for us to, you know, take it either direction. And obviously this week's going to be our Super Bowl preview show. We're absolutely stoked. We took a week off, just like the NFL did, between the AFC Championship, NFC Championship, and the Super Bowl. So we're back. We're revving, ready to go. Stats, any thoughts, initial thoughts you want to lead off with about the Super Bowl, and we can take it any direction you'd like?
That's a great question, if there's any thoughts. Well, did you know that Richard Sherman went to Stanford?
Yeah, I think that's been mentioned maybe once or twice.
I think it's the biggest mention, I don't know how to describe it, the most stupid storyline out of any Super Bowl since Jerome Bettis was from Detroit. I remember that was, oh, the last time the Seahawks were in the Super Bowl, pretty sure. That was perfect. Yep.
Yeah, 06, 07
there we go.
Season. Yep.
So it just figures out in a way that I just don't understand the idea that 2 weeks sucks. It's awful. And that's basically my point of view here. And that's what I'm going to intro it with.
Yeah, you know, it just feels like we've been hearing the same things over and over and over again for, 10 days now, 11 days. There just hasn't been that many storylines to the Super Bowl. You have the Manning legacy. You have the Richard Sherman ordeal, you know, whatever happened with that. You have the Marshawn Lynch situation with him not wanting to speak to the media. The fact that that has been leading off SportsCenter, how long Marshawn Lynch speaks to the media and what he says, is a joke. I can't remember, I guess excluding last spring when I was in Madrid and I didn't really have the access to the 24-hour news on TV. I can't remember another Super Bowl 2 weeks where I've been less interested in hearing what the talking heads have to say about the game. I just want the game to happen already. I really do. I just feel like number one defense versus number one offense, simple as that. Let's see which one wins out. So let's start to break down the game a little bit. We obviously haven't had a show since the AFC and NFC championships. I guess we can actually take a step back and just quick couple minutes, thoughts on those two games 2 weeks ago. You know, anything that you took away from those games?
Of course, as a Patriots fan, it's frustrating to see a team go down, and we watched it together, Brad. It was ugly. We just couldn't feel like the Pats had any chance at any time unless they would have gotten that two-point conversion in the fourth quarter. It was dreadful. It felt like being a Celtics fan this year. You know, it was frustrating just because there was no way to win that game. It just felt like Peyton Manning controlled the game, which it's possible he could do in the Super Bowl easily or do it against any defense in the world just because he is Peyton Manning and he seems to be reverting back to his just amazing days of playing like he had this entire season. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. And when you only punt on, I think it was one possession the entire game.
And I think it was the first one of the game.
Yeah. It was, that's when you look at a team and you say they are pretty good. And then John Fox making that play at the end. They could have had the opportunity to, what was it, kick a field goal or was it to punt? I forget on the last possession, but they went for it on fourth down, got the first down. That was a great play by them.
Yeah,
John Fox was usually conservative, too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They just steamrolled the Patriots in every facet of the game. Maybe special teams, you could say, was a wash, but there was nothing big either way. It just wasn't the Patriots' day. It really started to deteriorate when Aqib Talib went down.
Yeah, that was big.
I don't even want to talk about that Welker play because that has been beaten into the ground in Boston so much. There's just been so much talk.
There wasn't much in the national media about that one, huh? Not surprised. I didn't seem to be.
Yeah, the thing is the talk was more about what Bill Belichick said after the fact in the press conference when he called out Wes Welker and said pretty much it was one of the dirtiest plays he's ever seen.
Yeah.
That got a little bit more play than the actual play itself. I mean, you know, my thoughts are that it was an offensive pass interference, but it wasn't illegal to the point that it should have merited a fine or anything like that. That's crap. But so that's that. Moving over to the Seahawks 49ers game. What an outstanding game it was. It just was scintillating. Both teams played pretty well. It was hard hitting. There were offensive plays, defensive plays, a little bit of everything that you could possibly have wanted. And it came down to the last possession, which, you know, the NFL's got to be pleased about. The ratings, I'm sure, were through the roof. Anything from that game that, you know, stands out? Maybe looking at the 49ers, you know, their prospects going forward, anything in that game that you think is worthy of being talked about?
I'm sure Kaepernick never really wants to face the Seahawks again, even though they are in his division. He faces them twice every year and then had to get that third brutal beating by them or third brutal game against them this year. It's just frustrating for a team that is basically the second-best team in the NFC and just can't get in the Super Bowl just because the Seahawks are just a better defense, and it's just so strong. I understand that San Fran hadn't given up 100 yards to a rushing player all season, so it was amazing that they did that. But the Seahawks are just tremendous. You even saw it on the last play. That was basically just put a wrap on everything with Sherman and what started this total onslaught of a week or two of him getting this coverage. But I feel like going forward, you have to watch out. 6 of his 11 interceptions, Kaepernick's interceptions, were at the hands of the Seahawks this past year. It's amazing that they did that. I just don't understand that after 1 year of going to the Super Bowl, you take down the Seahawks late in the season, and they were all great games, but I'm just not sure I see the Seahawks, or I'm not sure I see the 49ers getting past the Seahawks anytime soon.
In Seattle.
That's a good point.
In San Francisco, they've beaten the Seahawks, you know, so that's something that I'm looking forward to going to the future is that division, every game, the head-to-head tiebreakers, the in-division games, the in-conference games, those are all going to be so important to determine where games are going to be played in the playoffs. And it's the same thing with the Saints. The Saints are a totally different team playing in the Dome and on the road. And you're going to see the Saints, I think, as well, you know, sell out to make sure that they get home playoff games next year. The one thing that I wanted to bring up with Kaepernick, and this is another story for another day, is the contract situation. He's still on that rookie contract of his. He's got 1 year left at really like nothing money. And the question is that people are starting to talk about, should the 49ers re-sign him now? Do they take a chance? You know, he maybe gets injured. Maybe he's really not that good. Maybe like he has a horrible season. His head falls apart, whatever. And then they probably get a bargain. Or do they wait another year? And then if, let's say, Kaepernick goes on to win them a Super Bowl, they might have to pay him Joe Flacco money. And on the flip side, you have Colin Kaepernick. Do you take the guaranteed money, kind of like Evan Longoria did when he was still on his rookie contract, Pedroia did when he was on his first contract? Do you take the money at a little bit of a discount to guarantee, you know, that you're set for the rest of your life? Or do you wait till free agency and make sure you cash out? It's a tough question. What are your thoughts of how you would go about it from either Kaepernick or the front office has said?
Anytime in football, I always would want that extended contract and just take it and just run. You know, of course, Kaepernick would run. It's one of those things where in football, the future is so uncertain. You know, at least in baseball, you can play 160 games a year as a, you know, some guys even do it. It's amazing. You're not going to see too many football players. There really aren't that many who are going to be able to give you every game starting and be able to come out the next season and do it again, especially running backs and especially running quarterbacks. And I just don't see him being able to stay healthy long enough, and that's when the guaranteed money comes in, and I think you just take it whenever you can. I think that's really what it is for Kaepernick.
Interesting. That's, you know, because the thing about Kaepernick is I just think him and Cam Newton, they're kind of built the same way. They're just massive people, cut, shredded, however you want to phrase it. They're built to take beatings, unlike, you know, a Russell Wilson. Now, that's why I think Russell Wilson's career may be shortened a little bit unless he learns to stay in the pocket more, because he's not a very big guy. He's Drew Brees size, and he's getting hit outside the pocket. He's running. He's doing all that stuff. I think Kaepernick is more built to play that type of game. But, Stats, one more question, and then we can move on to, you know, prognosticating and breaking down the Super Bowl. I'm going to name you five first, second, or third-year quarterbacks, because Kaepernick's technically in his third year, so that's why I have to add third, that you'd rather have for the next 5 years, okay? All things being equal, with the receiving core, good running backs, good defense, Cam Newton, Andrew Luck, RG3, Russell Wilson, or Colin Kaepernick. Out of those five quarterbacks, you could have one for the next 5 years. Who would you take?
That's tremendously tough. Well, you know what? Let me turn back on you. Can you? Oh, well, let me not turn back on you right away. The whole question becomes, what is it, just in a nutshell? Are we just looking at the player itself? Are we looking at a specific team that they are on, or their team going forward with them as it constructs right now? Or what? Maybe you
yeah.
can even
yeah. No,
offer
I'm
what
you thinking
think.
Just all things being equal, who do you think is the best quarterback to win in the NFL? Now, my answer out of those five, I like Andrew Luck, and the reason why is you just look at the quarterbacks that are winning Super Bowls and have won the last few Super Bowls. They're pocket passers. Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Joe Flacco. It's, you got to be able to stand in the pocket and deliver throws. And I just feel like teams are going to be able to game plan around running quarterbacks going forward. RG3, Kaepernick, Cam Newton, Russell Wilson. Now, what I like about Cam Newton is it seems like he started to develop the ability to throw the ball downfield.
That could be interesting.
And that arm is just an absolute cannon. But I like Andrew Luck's ability to play a cerebral game of football. He knows how to stay in the pocket. He can get out when he needs to, but it's not like a... It seems like with Kaepernick and Wilson and RG3, they want to get out of the pocket first, and if they have to throw, they'll throw. I think with Luck, and even with Cam Newton to an extent this year, I think you're seeing more of that ability to stay in the pocket and deliver throws in pressure situations, which is why I like Luck.
I would have really liked to see Reggie Wayne in for a full season, because he could have made it... You know, they could have had an even better chance against the Pats, and that would have been interesting to watch. Because Wayne was just such a great receiver for all those years with Harrison and Manning. And now you look at the two guys in the NFC West. That's really interesting. You had Newton, and was there one other one?
Newton, Wilson, Kaepernick, RG3.
And RG3, Love. Interesting. See, the thing about RG3 is, this next season for RG3 and Newton could be, the sky's the limit. Because RG3 is now with the back against the wall. The whole new situation in Washington, everybody's down on him. He was injured almost the entire season. And when you think about, well, maybe mentally, he's not back until a season afterwards. Everybody was just, it was all in for week one, and that was just, that was horrible. Now, that's huge. I think I may go with Cam Newton, because that seems to have the most potential for an all-around team that can just run you out of the building. I understand that they fell earlier this postseason. That was to San Fran, yeah. But I think if Newton, another year of what he did this year, I think he builds on it and he goes forward and continues to produce. And I think that's why they are in the Super Bowl next year.
Yeah, I think the Panthers seem like they're one wide receiver away from being in the
Fitzgerald.
That's a big name. I don't know what kind of budget they have in terms of how much money they want to spend. They don't seem like the type of team that just shells out money here and there. And they, in order to get Fitzgerald, they'd either have to have Arizona swallow a lot of the money, restructure their contract, or you have to cut someone else to free up that cap space. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how the Panthers see themselves and what their holes are, because their defense seems like it's built for the next 10 years.
It was arguably the best one for most of the season until Seattle took the reins right at the end.
Yeah, so... It's a debate for another day, and I'm sure we'll be doing
like
this years into the future.
That was nice, man.
All right, so let's get into the Super Bowl. Now, like we said, it's been 12 days since that Sunday, Championship Sunday. A lot has transpired. Not a lot of, you know, tabloid activity. Not a lot of trash talking. A lot of mutual respect between these two teams. Let's break it down like we did for the championship games, kind of section of the team by section of the team versus the complementary of the other of the opposition.
And we'll also get Alex Griffel his impressions of the game as well.
Absolutely.
We'll jump in with that.
Let's start with the head coaching. I think we did that last time. Let's start with the coaches. Pete Carroll, John Fox. Bill Belichick decides he retires tomorrow. All right. Who would you prefer? Who would you prefer as the coach of your team? Who do you think is the better coach?
Interesting. Pete Carroll's a daring guy. You know, it seems like he would be. Of course, even though in the way past, not too many New England Patriots fans like him that much. But I think I'd go with him over John Fox. I'm just even with the nice move on the fourth down in the AFC Championship. He's just too conservative for me. I always like those guys who's going to take all those chances on the field, and I feel like Pete Carroll would do that. And we could even see, you know, the Sean Payton, like, any time you can go for that onside kick. It could be, he'll surprise us with something. I'm not sure it would be the onside kick because you could think of it. It's something that you won't think about. My guess would be a two-point conversion when you don't need it. That's just in my head right now. As in don't need it, as in, like, early when most teams wouldn't do it. That's what I'm thinking with it.
Yeah, no, I like Pete Carroll, too. I think he got kind of a bad rap in New England, and then obviously he left a disgraced USC program, although with a lot of success, kind of with an asterisk, given all the transgressions that they had. But I heard a stat that I think he's made the playoffs in 5 of his 8 seasons as a head coach. Over the last two, I think as in Seattle, I think he's 42-28. Now, that's a little bit inflated because of his success the last 2 years. But they win playoff games. I think his career in the playoffs is 5-4, so he's a plus winning coach in the playoffs. He coaches defense, and it just seems like you look at the teams that win Super Bowls, they may not be the best defense, or they may not be dominating at all, but in the games in the playoffs that win, you have to be able to make plays on defense, and it seems like his teams are able to do that and come up with clutch plays. You know, that Richard Sherman play, like you said, being the epitome of a Pete Carroll-type defense.
Does it feel like John Fox always gets the short shrift, though? Like, no matter where he is, no matter what team he goes against, he seems to always be under the radar. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, I'm acknowledging it because it seems like that's what happens when anybody ever talks about him versus the other coach or what he does. It's always under the radar. He does it, and he does his job very well. And especially after going through that, what was it, the heart minor surgery or whatever. You know, anytime it's with the heart, it's important, and he needed to get it out of the way, quote unquote, is what he said during the season. Like, coming back from that, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we're both in agreement, advantage Carroll, but we're not slighting John Fox. Yeah. He's clearly a good coach. I just don't think he's able to transcend, make his team reach a transcendent level like it seems like Pete Carroll can with his defense. Pete Carroll offenses aren't anything special, but with his defense, he's a special coach. Let's get to our first PSA. Of the day.
Ordering comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. For free ideas on how to save, go to feedthepig.org.
And so that leads us into our next segue. Let's talk about the Denver passing offense versus the Seattle passing defense. Okay? And I guess you have to include the pass rush, because that obviously plays a huge role in determining how a team is able to defend the pass. You've got arguably the best group of four weapons on offense. You know, I'm excluding Knowshon Moreno, but I'm saying Wes Welker, Eric Decker, Demaryius Thomas, and Julius Thomas as pass catchers. You really should include Knowshon Moreno with the season he had being able to catch the ball versus Pro Bowlers everywhere. Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, the defensive linemen, Clemens, Bruce Irvin, you know, Bobby Wagner. Again, without it giving away who your pick is, we'll leave that till the end. How do you think this plays out, and what role might the weather play in that as well?
Oh, of course, the weather. It seems like it's going to be clear. I know it's going to be cold, but Manning should be able to do okay in, what is it, 35, 40 degree weather is what they're thinking. I feel like it's lucky that it's not going to be gusting winds or snow or heavy hail or anything like that, because that would really force you into going to a lot more Knowshon Moreno, a lot more screens, a lot more short passes. But of course, Manning has been a little bit closer to the short passing than he has in the past with this season. Obviously, I would go with, in my opinion, I always like the better offense against a certain defense in just any NFL game, just because Manning, I don't think, loses to even this most superior defense in the league because of just how he orchestrates a game.
I think you could have, what is the 86 Bears out there, or even the most recent Bears Super Bowl team, the Super Bowl losers actually to the Colts and Manning out there, and they wouldn't be able to do it. And I think that's one of the reasons why I would go with the Colts here. And I guess I am giving away my answer, but it's just because they just do so much. And I just, it's just in football, I just feel like that's the way they can do it. He can just have them on their toe or have them on their heels on defense.
Yeah, no. It's hard to believe that after 2 weeks of preparation with the way Manning goes about his business, and you don't see him pictures of him at clubs or anything like that. Like Ronnie Hillman, you know, picture of him surfaces at a strip club. Like that's the difference between him and Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning probably in his hotel room all week watching film preparing. I don't think you see Peyton Manning have a bad game, but I also don't believe that Peyton Manning has a transcending game like he did against the Pats. I don't see him throwing for 400 on 75% completion, no interceptions. I just think that he's prone to making a mistake or two. There were a few passes against the Patriots that were kind of ducks that fluttered in the air that I just feel like Earl Thomas gets to, or Richard Sherman gets to, that McCourty and Kyle Arrington don't.
Remember that the one where it just squibbled in the air?
Yeah, and it dropped into Welker's hands between two defenders. That's exactly what I'm talking about. So in that sense, I think you could see, especially if there's wind, which I think they're expecting, is decent wind gusts. I think you could have a few big turnovers. And then other thing that I think is the X factor is whether they can hit Manning. We didn't talk about this. Manning, the Pats defense had zero quarterback hits on Manning last week. There was one time early in the game where Chandler Jones kind of swiped his left shoulder, and that forced maybe an overthrow in the end zone. But it didn't register as a hit. He's going to get hit early and often. I'm sure, I wouldn't even be surprised if Pete Carroll told someone on that defense, or the coordinator told someone on that defense, listen, I'm okay with you taking a roughing the passer early on just to send a message, all right, to knock him on his ass and say, listen, this is how it's going to be. We're going to be here early and often, and we're going to be here for the entire game. So I think you have Manning throwing for about 300 yards, but I could see him throwing for three touchdowns and two interceptions, and the Seahawks six or seven sacks, something like that. I just think that the Broncos offensive line has not seen anything like the Seahawks.
I know I was looking at the numbers behind the situation with, you know, rushing the quarterback and the Broncos and Seahawks. I know the Seahawks, when they rush the quarterback, have a league best 41% completion percentage against, as far as the lowest one in the league. Manning has only been rushed something like 14%, or he's only been touched or something like that 14% of the time. It's nuts.
Wow.
How low. I forget what it was, but I know he is the least touched quarterback in the league, and obviously we saw that last week. It's the offensive line, arguably one of the best in the league, going up against the best defense in the league. And I think that's what it is. And you're really going to see what happens on Sunday when it happens. But I just don't know if they actually get to him. What's the number that they need to get to as far as interceptions or turnovers for the Seahawks to win? Because I don't think they'll be able to win without any turnovers.
Yeah, I think they just need to win the turnover battle.
Interesting.
I just think they need to win the turnover battle.
1-0 will win it.
I think so.
Wow.
I think so. I guess it's a decent segue into the next conversation. I think the Seahawks are going to be able to score on the Broncos. I don't think that's going to be an issue. The Broncos, Percy Harvin is supposedly healthy, going to play a big
supposedly
role.
How many quarters or minutes does he make it? Six? It's six minutes?
I just have a feeling it comes up big. I just have a feeling it comes up big. And, you know, there's so much motivation for him, given that he was traded for a first-round pick. He's played 33 snaps this entire season. I think that they go all in their game plan to get him as many touches as possible, because you never know when he's about to go down with a concussion. So I don't think that the Seahawks need to win the turnover battle by three or four turnovers. I think they need to have a big one. You know, you think about the game against the Saints the Colts had in, I think it was the 2009-2010 Super Bowl, where Peyton Manning only threw one interception. That one interception was the pick six to seal the game. I think that was it. You know, so I don't think that this needs to be a turnover heavy game for Seattle to win. I think they just need to have a big one at the right time, an impactful turnover, to win this game. Because I think they'll score points. I think Marshawn Lynch is going to find a way. It seems like the weather conditions are going to be perfect for him to just run the ball 30 times.
Well, does the Denver defense stop the run? Is that the big... Because they don't have to worry that much about the passing game. It's Doug Baldwin, Percy Harvin, and Golden Tate which is one of the middle, I would say middle or even lower middle receiving cores in the league. You have Zach Miller at tight end. I don't, no one really
no
makes
one scares
me
feel,
yeah.
No one scares you. But, you know, the thing that you could, you have set up is potential play action bootlegs by Russell Wilson if they, you know, sell one direction, just bootleg the other way. If you had, if you just had that receiving core and an average quarterback who didn't have, who just stayed in the pocket, Alex Smith, I would say to you, you're screwed. But with Russell Wilson, he can change games so quickly with his feet. There was that play against the 49ers where he, I think he was behind, he snapped the ball and had the ball in his hand for 9 seconds before throwing a 50-yard bomb to Doug Baldwin.
Was that the fourth? Oh, no, that wasn't the fourth down one, was it? Oh, okay.
That wasn't the fourth down one. But that was a big turning point in the game when San Francisco looked like they might have been pulling away. So, you know, getting back to the turnover battle, I think whoever wins the turnover battle will win this game. And I'm not prepared to make a pick of who is going to win the turnover battle. I'm just saying I think that's going to be I know it's easy to say, but there's going to be an impactful turnover that makes a huge difference in the outcome.
I'm leaning towards more of a fumble from Knowshon Moreno than any interceptions from Peyton. I just don't see Peyton throwing an interception this game. It just doesn't feel like it. I just don't. Maybe just because I'm thinking the Broncos will win, even though I'd be rooting for the Seahawks, it just seems like Peyton won't have... He handles the ball so well. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, he's on a just this run he's on is unparalleled.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, again, stating the obvious. He's had the best season of all time.
Do you go out on the Super Bowl victory? I know it's a far-fetched.
You mean to retire?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay,
no,
just checking.
Yeah, definitely not. Definitely
I think
not.
I would just because, you know what? I'm done. That's it.
Yeah. I mean,
going on a high note.
That'd be a pretty sweet way to go out, like Ray Lewis, but I think he's got so much game
it's
left.
It's
a
amazing.
A lot of money left. I mean, he's going to get paid $20 million a year for the next three years, I think, after he signed that initial contract. I don't see him doing that, but I do expect a good game out of Manning. I just, you know, it seems like the Seattle has the tools to be able to stop a type of offense that Manning has. They have cover corners, they have safeties that can hit, and they have a defensive line that can get to the quarterback. So, you know, again, we've discussed this before, but that offensive line is pretty damn good in Denver, and they are able to protect Manning so well, and Manning gets the ball out of his hand within 1 or 2 seconds. I mean, that's one of the things that makes him so special. We'll see. We'll see. If they want to give that extra split second for Demaryius Thomas to get separation off of a better cornerback, that might be that extra split second that allows the defense to get to Manning. So that'll be the chess match.
And that's exactly what I was watching with the amount of time that it takes for the Seahawks to get to the quarterback on an average play versus the average play when Peyton Manning is throwing the ball. It is about 0.3 seconds is the difference. So if you are looking at a better secondary, does he have that time to be able to evade defenders? Because we know Peyton's not the best at being able to get through. As we saw, his brother might have had one of the craziest plays in NFL history with regard to evading defenders, but we don't know if Peyton can do it, especially in this game.
No. Peyton Manning is probably the slowest quarterback in the pocket of anyone in the game. Maybe you can make the case Phillip Rivers is really slow, Brady.
Roethlisberger comes to mind, even though he runs so well.
He does kind of clunk around. He does.
Yes, clunk. I like that.
All right. So, what other main storylines are there for this game before we you know, get to our picks?
Mike Adams, safety of the Broncos, claims he'll walk to his hometown of Paterson, New Jersey if they win the Super Bowl. Yeah, 12 miles he'll walk. I thought that was funny. I just want to stick that in there. Yep, that's exactly. I just thought that was pretty funny.
I'm trying to think what other. What are your initial impressions of, you know, the Super Bowl? Being in New York, the fun that's been had. You think it's been a good thing for the NFL so far?
You know Larry Johnson of WEI?
Yep.
Yeah, so he did a cartoon for today on, I'll post this on the page. He did a cartoon in which you see everybody in traffic basically lined up in different directions and just completely mashed and everybody missing the game. And, you know, coming out of one of the blurbs is, and Welker gets the touchdown with 2 minute warning. And you know, it's so weird, just all the stipulations and all the problems that they'll have in New York. That's one of the problems that I see with it. You know, I don't think it's ever going to happen again, or it won't happen for a long time. It's going to happen once, and then we'll just enjoy nice warm weather Super Bowls from now on.
No, I saw an interview today on NFL Network with Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles, and he was saying, why can't Philly get a Super Bowl?
Yeah,
we've
exactly.
got the infrastructure. Oh. But yeah, I no.
You know what just, they would do? They would end up having everybody at all the stadiums. I remember I was there for the All-Star game, the NBA All-Star game way back, and they used the old, what was it, the Spectrum? I forget. They used the old stadium for some of the events. You know how they have all the stadiums together?
Yeah.
It would just be one of those wild places, and I don't think they would have enough parking either because of just of how concentrated all the stadiums are, but it's just kind of crazy in Philly as well. I just, yeah. Oh, in Boston as well. You know, we're going to go for any of these cold weather cities. It's frustrating. And it is New Jersey, by the way, so it's never going to be New York. I yeah. doubt they'll ever have a football stadium big enough for New York.
No, probably not. Probably not. All right, Stats, before we get to our who do you think will win and why, mm-hmm. I want to ask you, who are you rooting for to win? If not a team, individuals that you kind of are saying, you know, I wouldn't mind if they got a Super Bowl and why. And I can take that if you're not ready off the bat with that one.
Yeah, let me think about that. That's interesting. You just dropped that question. I like it. You know, go for it. I'll respond.
Yeah. So, for one, I'm rooting for Wes Welker. I Ooh. Think that he's just... His 6 years with the Patriots. I just think he's been one of the hardest workers. Every day shows up, gets beaten, he gets bloodied, he gets up and he plays hard. And you know how much it must have hurt him to be missing those games with the concussion. He just is the type of competitor that I want on my team, and clearly the Patriots had him. I think he deserves a Super Bowl, and I'd be happy for him to get one. I'm rooting against Peyton Manning, not because I dislike Manning. I think he's actually a very upstanding guy, the amount of charity work he does, and I think he's just a consummate professional. He kind of reminds me a lot of Mike Lowell, you know. And
ooh, I like that.
He's just like a locker room guy that you it's hard to dislike as a person. But as a Tom Brady fan, the debate about which quarterback is better, you know, is second to Joe Montana, if not the best of all time. That conversation gets a little bit harder to make. The case for Brady gets a little harder to make when if Manning gets to two Super Bowls, best regular season quarterback of all time, best regular season individual season of all time, that gets a little harder to make. So if I'm a Tom Brady fan, if you're someone that wants to stand behind his legacy, you want Manning to just wet himself this weekend.
The Donovan McNabb experience from the Super Bowl.
Exactly. So, and then on the Seahawks side... I really like think it would be nice for Richard Sherman to win the Super Bowl, and I'll tell you why. I'm so fed up with the press conferences and the interviews that we see today where coaches and players just say exactly what they're told. They're just like robots. Like, it's almost as though they're reading off of a teleprompter. I think that getting someone like Richard Sherman a Super Bowl and getting him into the limelight and showing that, you know, you can be successful playing like he does and backing up the talk and just bringing that bravado with you and not holding back how you feel. Because you remember, these players are all so competitive. They all kind of want to say what Richard Sherman's saying. They just don't. They have a filter that Richard Sherman doesn't. I just think I'm okay with the precedent set by Richard Sherman. And if he wins, it'll be made a little bit more okay. And I think hopefully you get to see these teams and these players start to open themselves up a little bit to give us a better sense of how they actually feel.
So if they win, so the Seahawks, does Sherman just rip the microphone away and just push over Aaron Andrews' time, or what does he do to upstage what he did last time?
I think he'll be a little bit more tame.
I know, it's like, so frustrating, he would be.
He learned his lesson, but I still think if he wins, you're going to hear stuff in the offseason. You might see it a commercial about being the best. I mean, he's going to beat that drum for a long, long time, and rightfully so. He's getting it done. You know, I think it would be a little bit more venom from on my part towards him if he wasn't that good, but he is that good. And you talk to the people you listen to the people in the league, players and analysts, they all agree he is the real deal. So I'm okay with Richard Sherman. He's okay in my book.
Very interesting. I like those. Those are really like important figures in this game. I'm just trying to think of guys who really make it a polarizing thing to root for or against them, or what they think as far as winning a Super Bowl. Marshawn Lynch has been maybe the most roughed up ball carrier, it seems like, in his career. Maybe with the exception of Adrian Peterson. I just don't understand how he keeps doing it. I know Dan Le Batard was talking about this recently, the idea that he's basically had 1,000 carries in the last 3 years. Include those playoff games, and it's just, it's nuts. I just don't know how he's done it. He went his first 3 years in Buffalo. He wasn't even able to do it. He didn't even last 3 years as a starter in Buffalo. But he's done it in Seattle. And he's been maybe the best running back in the league. It's amazing. I don't know how he does it. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'd be happy for him to win one this time around. He could go down as a top 20 running back in NFL history. Maybe if you get a few more years in him, could creep up even further. I'm just amazed. And he kind of has that Skittles brand behind him, which is kind of cool. So I like that too.
He seems like the type of running back that is going to flame out just mentally. Yes. And like one or two. He's like a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
He's such a nut job.
Yes.
But he gets it done on the field and he just wants to win. He doesn't want to talk to the media. He just wants to play football, and you respect a guy for that.
Yeah.
And you are listening to Bedtime Sports with Brad and Stats Adam on KWUR, Clayton 90.3 FM. We're going to move on to our picks, and let's bring in the previous host of the show, Covering the Bases, which airs Fridays 1 to 2 o'clock Central Time, 2 to 3 on the East Coast. Let's bring him in. He's Alex Griffel. Alex, what are your thoughts on how this game's going to play out on Sunday? Give us a pick and why.
Well, Brad, Stats, I think that the event on Sunday is going to be really, really interesting. I mean, you know, between all the snacks and all the discussions of who is or isn't going to potentially win the game and why we shouldn't care about it, I mean, all those wonderful, wonderful, that main event, those ads, they're going to be, I mean, I can't wait to see them. There's going to be a new Budweiser ad that I've seen described. There's going to be a new Toyota ad with the Muppets in it that's supposed to be hysterical. There's going to be a Full House reunion. I mean, I can't wait. I can't wait for this Super Bowl Sunday. It's going to be impressive.
Can we get a score?
No score.
I think the GoDaddy commercials are going to win best commercial by far, closely followed by a Budweiser ad. As long as it's got a Clydesdale in it. If the Budweiser ads have Clydesdales in them, I think that they have a very good shot of coming in first place in best commercials.
Thank you for that astute analysis. Stats, your thoughts.
If we ever have Alex on another show, which it's looking less and less probable now, we may have to, you know, do those interviews, you know, those pre-interviews they do for The Tonight Show and stuff like that. I remember watching the Larry Sanders Show on HBO. They do all the pre-interviews and stuff, and Larry will drop in, and he'll talk to the guy a little bit about what he wants to talk about. Well, we got to get some secretaries to check out what Alex is going to talk about before we get him on here, because I think we should now have a weekly segment with him.
You know, on like WEI when they used to have like a really crappy caller and they used to do like the blow up.
Yeah, calls, yeah.
Just blow him up. I think next we should have that ready to go. What? And when Alex opens his mouth, we just blow him up instantly.
Well,
did you just equate me to a crappy caller?
It seems like it's trending that way. Yeah.
What we'll do is we'll unleash him to the world sometime during a show. You'll never know when it will happen. It could be the beginning, could be the end, could be when he leaves, because he's definitely on his way out now. And it'll be about anything. It will be about, it wasn't like, remember how in 60 Seconds of Soccer with Trevor was like, it could have been anything, and we didn't know how he was going to do it, whether he was going to read off scores, or if he was actually going to tell us about a story, or if we had heard about it. Sometimes we had heard about it. This is going to be, this could be a fun way to do our last semester here. Alex will have 6 seconds to decide if he, about 6 to 8 seconds, we'll decide if he's actually on a right track, yep. And if not, blow up sound.
Yep, perfect. I'm down. All right, Alex, have a great weekend. Thanks for checking in. Stats.
Does he actually have a team that will win? Is there a team? Anything?
Oh, I don't think you can bet against Peyton Manning.
Oh, there we go. Can't bet against Peyton Manning.
So we just got our hot sport take, hot sports take from Alex Griffel. You cannot bet against Peyton Manning, he says.
Except, we don't hear that about that
except
too
for
often.
Those like times that you could. But anyway. All right, Alex. It's been fun. Stats. Let's get to the nitty gritty.
So we have Alex coming in with the Denver Broncos pick. I have also a Denver Broncos pick. Thank you very much, Alex. I'm thinking 21-20. A weird score, just because I want it to be. Peyton Manning with the last second drive, or you know, somewhere in the fourth quarter. It's going to be a drive in the fourth quarter that'll win it
for a touchdown or a field goal. Are you thinking it's 2014 or 2018?
21-20. It would be 20-14 at that point.
Okay. Wow. Goes down the field for a game-winning touchdown. Now that would be high entertainment. I like the Seahawks. I'm thinking
interesting.
I'm thinking 27-23.
Oh, I like that.
Okay, I'm thinking two touchdowns and three field goals for Denver, and three touchdowns and two field goals for Seattle. I think that Seattle's offense is not being talked about enough. I think they can put up points if they need to. Yeah. I know Russell Wilson hasn't thrown for more than 215 yards, I think, in his last six games or something like that. But this Denver pass defense is really bad. They're going to have holes. If Percy Harvin plays, you know, to the level that we know he can, or
that's
even 80-70%, it's a big turnaround. He's also going to be returning kicks. I like the Seahawks in this game. I think Manning is going to have an MVP-like performance. Ooh. I'm just not sure it's going to be enough. And I think he's going to have to settle for too many field goals against the defense in the red zone. Seattle's going to score touchdowns. They're going to have a big play on defense, some turnover, some pick six, something like that that's going to change the, you know, the course of the game. I like Seattle 27-23.
You mentioned that 215 yards was his best out of his last 6 weeks, and that was last week. He hasn't had multiple touchdowns since he had 300 yards in week 12. So it's interesting that Russell Wilson is being lauded as you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. However, it comes down to him making big plays as opposed to having big games. And I think that's what it'll come down to, right? You would think that Lynch carries the load 100 yards or so, but you think that Russell Wilson will go for more than 215?
I think he will. I think I actually might even say that I think he has to.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think I like to. That. Because that the Denver defense, we saw it. The Denver defense is going to shut down the run, most likely. Because it's not like it's Peyton Manning on the other side of the field there. It's not Peyton Manning quarterbacking that Seattle Seahawks team. It's Russell Wilson, who has holes. I just don't think that, you know, I'll tell you, I'm rooting for the Seahawks. And I think that's just because we don't want Peyton Manning to tarnish Brady's legacy. Because Manning could easily win multiple Super Bowls at the end of his career here. And we don't even know if Brady's going to make it back.
Yeah, and you have to remember, Von Miller's was out for the year.
Yeah.
You know, he was injured.
We forgot about that.
I don't know what game it was, but it was a few games before the end of the regular season.
Did it happen twice? Did he have the suspension and then he got injured?
He had the suspension. I think his ACL was either week 16, week 17, but something like that.
Yeah,
he's
week
back
week
six.
Year. Yeah, week 16 against Houston.
Yep. So they're built. They're built to go for the next few years till really the end of Manning's window to win Super Bowl. So yeah, this could be a run here. You know, with the weapons that they have. I will say though, Eric Decker is a free agent at the end of the season. That'll be something to look for to see if they re-sign him.
Every time I think of all these receivers, the Pats need to get somebody. There were rumors this past week that they would have had Fitzgerald last offseason. Decker would be a guy to go for. You got to get a receiver who can help this team. But Dobson said that he's going to be part of the future, or the team said he's going to be part of the future. It's just, that's one of the reasons why the Pats didn't win last week.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. All right, Stats, so we got about 15 minutes left. I know you have a few. What up with that?
Yeah.
Where are we going with? Ready to rock. Let's get the audio.
Oh, we haven't had the audio, it feels like, in years.
Let's bring it out and let's get rolling with what up with that.
What's up with that? What's up with that? Ooh-wee. What's up with that? What's up with that? What's up with that? Yeah.
All right. And before we get to what's up with that, let's roll with our second and final PSA.
If someone you know is thinking of dropping out, talk to them. It could be the one thing that keeps them going. Go to boostup.org to learn more. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
All right, Stats, so let's get rocking with this. I'll use some executive power and skip right to question B.
Yeah.
David Ortiz said it's time to move on from the Red Sox if he's not offered a multi-year deal after the season. I actually think he wants one before the season. He wants one so that he doesn't have to go year by year because he has 1 year left on a two-year deal. What up with that?
I mentioned at the end of covering the bases with Alex, you know, or even Alex was talking about it. It's a situation in which both teams want, or both sides want to have the future with each other. They don't want it to be like Wakefield where he had a 4 ERA or worse, and coming back each year just to eat up innings. This guy's your main power source. He's the reason why you won the World Series. He's the reason why you were going through the playoffs and was arguably one of the best teams in Red Sox history. You got to go with, you know, it's got to happen. It's going to happen. And Alex, I think, had a segment. It was called, "This is never going to happen," as in, they're never going to break up. It's going to stay.
Yeah, it's just the, I think, you know, if anyone deserves to be able to go on more than just a year at a time contract, it's Big Poppy, but it just seems like this is a recurring theme. Like, anytime he signs a contract, there's always an issue with being disrespected and the team not, you know, trying to, you know, protect his interests. So it's like a little bit annoying, but he's Big Poppy. He's on our Mount Rushmore of Boston athletes. Yes. It's kind of hard to argue with anything he does.
All right, our next one, Carmelo Anthony's wife, Lala Vasquez, or what is now Lala Anthony. I said, I definitely think he will stay in New York in an interview with Bravo TV on one of maybe the worst TV shows in history. What up with that?
Yeah, I don't really buy it. I think that he might stay in New York, but he's going to test free agency. He's going to have Kobe coming into his lounge and trying to recruit him for LA. And it's going to be more than just a few teams looking to get Carmelo Anthony because... Yeah, I know he hasn't really done that much in the playoffs in his career, but he'll fill seats. He's going to get excitement around your team. If you have the money, yeah, they're going to go after Melo. But ultimately, I think it comes down to New York or LA.
Boston?
No shot. Okay, I don't want him for my team.
That was the question. I know it most likely wouldn't happen, but I just thought maybe if you want a dynamic scorer, you pair him with Rondo. It would just be very interesting, just in my fantasy world. Anyway.
All right. We mentioned the Larry Fitzgerald talk, and I wanted to... You know, crafty, what up with that?
Yeah.
Jeff Howe was on Felger and Maz yesterday, and he said that he brought up the potential theory of would you do a Rob Gronkowski for Larry Fitzgerald straight up trade tomorrow? And the question to you is, what up with that?
What up with that? What up with yes? I would do it just because you can't have a guy stay on the field. It's just... Now you talked about Talib going down in the game, and that's happened twice now in AFC Championships. You haven't even been able to see Gronkowski on the field. That's just horrible. You got to cut the cord sometime. I'm guessing you agree. I don't know. That's
yeah,
great.
No,
it's a great question, though.
I think that I'm willing to go to town with, again, I'm assuming that they don't re-sign Edelman, okay? Because I think that there's going to be money elsewhere that's going to be offered to him that he's going to take. So you get rid of Edelman, take Fitzgerald on. You're looking at the weapons that you have of Dobson, Amendola, Larry Fitzgerald, Tompkins, Josh Boyce, and then insert whatever tight end you don't. You don't actually need a tight end in that situation. You just
and we even have a few on the team right now.
And they can block fine, and you have Hooman, obviously, and Matthew Mulligan. They can do their job, but it just seems like Brady needs some big physical receivers. Larry Fitzgerald's proven. He had that monster game in the playoffs, the Super Bowl run the Super Bowl game against the Steelers. I would do it. It's very sad because Rob Gronkowski is the most dominating player in the NFL when healthy. He's the most unstoppable player. But again, when you have to add that caveat of when healthy, it just doesn't have the same mustard.
It's annoying. And that's something that Patriots fans have felt because when you're so spoiled to have a team that can win three Super Bowls, and then you add on Moss to a team, then you add on Gronkowski to a team, they're able to get Talib. They're able to actually put together seasons in which 16-0, you know, 10-plus wins in so many years in a row. Is it a situation in which you want to try to keep fighting for this championship year after year? And I think that's what they want to do because Belichick and Brady are running out of time, as you're seeing with Peyton. This is the end of all three of their careers within the next few years. So they got to keep fighting for it, and I think that's a trade you make as soon as possible.
Yeah, no, I would do it. I would do it. And from the Arizona Cardinals' perspective, he wasn't even their leading receiver this year. they have some talent on the offensive side of the ball.
Absolutely.
They're probably going to draft a quarterback. He may not start right away. They may keep Palmer just a mentor and at least give it a little bridge, but their defense is ready to rock. They could free up a lot of money. Gronkowski's not getting paid nearly as much as Larry Fitzgerald is. I think that trade makes a lot of sense for both teams.
And speaking of ready to rock, Round Ball Rock is the preview song for our Power Ranks. Are we going right into NBA Power Ranks? Here we go.
Great, Great music stats. Love it. Love it. All right, so why don't you take this away? Give us your top three teams in the NBA right now.
Top three teams in the NBA right now. All right, so we had some national television games last night. I know one of them was not, you know, the best teams, the Knicks and the, what was it, the Cavaliers, yuck. But we did have an interesting other two games last night. We had the Suns take down the Pacers to move them down another peg. The Pacers have now lost two in a row. Lance Stephenson, a snub on the All-Star team. But I think what you're looking at for your top three teams in the NBA now are your Thunder are number one because of how Durant has been doing. The interesting thing about it, though, is this is not the team you're going to see in the playoffs. You saw what they did to the Heat this past week. What's going to happen when they actually face off either the Heat or any of the big Western Conference teams? We can talk about that. It's just what's going to be, how different is it going to be from January when Durant's put up all these amazing games? Thunder number one. Heat number two. Yeah, there's not really any explanation for that.
You're putting them ahead of the Pacers?
Yes, because when you lose two games in a row, you do not feel, you cannot stay up too high. This is not good. That's another home loss for the Pacers. This is now their second of the season. They have been the best home team in the league. If you lose the Suns without Eric Bledsoe, I understand they've been good this season, but they're a bottom Western Conference team, a bottom of the playoff race Boston Western Conference team. So that's why I moved them to third. What do you think?
All right, OKC number one. They're playing incredible ball right now. They're on a 9-game winning streak. Durant's having one of the best stretches we've ever seen in NBA history. I watched the entirety of the game on, what was it, Wednesday night against the Heat.
Yeah.
They came out down 22-4. I thought the
18-0
game was
gonna run, right?
Oh, it was just insane. And then Durant and that team just started piecing it together. They hit, I think, 16 threes. They were shooting 64% from three. It was just an insane number. That's obviously not sustainable, but they're doing an amazing job right now. I also have been hearing talk that they're not going to be as good when Russell Wilson comes back.
Russell Wilson?
Russell Westbrook. Oh, man. That's a bad one right there. I don't care what the metrics say. They're not winning a championship with just Durant. They're just not.
We saw what happened last postseason.
Exactly. And when the defense ramps up and you can pretty much stop one player like that, they're not as good a team. I know Russell Westbrook is not that efficient. He's not that much of a facilitator. I give me Russell Westbrook. I don't care what the metrics say. That's total BS that they're not going to be as good a team in the playoffs with Russell Westbrook.
Lakers Clippers have a better record without Chris Paul. Oh, okay. Well, you can do better without Chris Paul.
Yeah, exactly. No. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I don't even want to get riled up about this because I think it's such a dumb argument. So that's number one. I still like Indiana at number two.
Interesting.
Every team's allowed to have a blip. The you know, the Heat, who you have as your number two team, mm-hmm. had previously lost, I think, four straight. They lost, mm-hmm. I don't know, something out of, five out of seven, something like that. They're not playing the best ball. It happens to the best of them. They still have the Pacers are playing unbelievable basketball at home with, what was it, only two, 21-2.
Mm-hmm.
Not concerned. You know, they'll get it back together. And then my number three team, I'm actually going to go with the LA Clippers.
Whoa.
They are playing great ball. I know they just got blown out by the Golden State Warriors, but it's in Golden State, which is a really tough place to play. They're playing outstanding. Jamal Crawford has stepped up and filled the void left by Chris Paul. Blake Griffin has elevated his game to all-star starter level right now. I don't know what his numbers are. His numbers on the season are, I don't know, I think like 22 and almost 10 during the season, mm-hmm. but I think since Chris Paul's been out, his numbers are way, way higher. I think they're coming together. J.J. Redick just got back from injury. He's playing great ball. They seem like they're... Here's what I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you have with the Thunder and the Clippers is when you're a player like Westbrook or Chris Paul goes out, other players get opportunities to show up and step up and develop their game and develop more confidence. I think that's what's going to happen. So when those players do come back, they're going to be riding high. They're going to know they're going to have someone that's going to pick them up, but they're also going to have built that confidence within their own games so that when the moment comes and they have to make a big shot or a big play, they'll know that they've done it before and they can do it again. So I like the Clippers right now as my number three team. The Heat to me seem like they're missing something. I don't know what that is, and maybe they're just waiting to the postseason.
They're missing the playoffs, yes.
They're out of my top three. They're top five, but they're not my top three.
They're
right
missing
now.
The playoff atmosphere. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Also, Darren Collison, you mentioned Jamal Crawford. Darren Collison stepping up, now starting for the Los Angeles Clippers, scored double-digit points in each of the last six games. You know, when you look at the Clippers, and this is what I wanted to ask you, I understand we put the power rankings. That's kind of like what's going on right now. And what's going on right now is, okay, the Clippers are playing really well. Heat had a minor blip. Pacers had a minor blip. Thunder have been unbelievable. When the playoffs come around, are the Clippers a team to watch out for because of Doc Rivers, because of what they did for this year, or do they fall again, maybe even in the first round, because they might not even have home court advantage?
Yeah. No, it's going to be so tough. And, you know, something that just, you know, dawned on me is with San Antonio's injuries, they might be healthy by the time the playoff comes around, but they might be a 4, 5, 6 seed, something like that, with how competitive the West is. And so some team is going to get a really tough matchup against a great team, even though that they're, you know, the Spurs are in the middle. So that's why I think that there's no guarantee that the Clippers, you know, make it any further than they have in the past. But I just feel like they're a deeper team this year. They've got that toughness that Doc Rivers brings, plus J.J. Redick, Jared Dudley, guys that are tremendous role players. And you haven't seen, you know, any like the issues that you have with like Lamar Odom, you know, pouting or not.
Didn't they almost bring him back?
I think they chose
Tito Turgulu.
Yep. They just seem like they have it. They have the coach now. They have the head of the snake, so to speak, which they didn't really have with Vinny Del Negro. I think the Clippers are just as likely as any team in the West to get to the Western Conference Finals.
It might be my little anti-Doc Rivers feel because I want them to flop this year and then have a bad season next year because the Celtics have their pick in 2015. But or I think it is 2015. Yeah, next year, right? Yeah. So I think that's one of the reasons. But I just don't like the Clippers no matter who is at the helm. I don't know what it is about the Clippers mantra or whatever they have. Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, this team, Chris Paul, is not a championship team to me. And that's why I think they lose in the first or second round. But that'll be really interesting to see.
I'm not sure any of those guys have a ring. I'm just trying to think back to the team. I don't think any of the guys on the Clippers, Anton Jameson, I'm just trying to think of some other players. Matt Barnes won one with the Lakers, I believe.
There you go, yes.
Was he on their team?
Almost sure.
So we'll check on that. But
I do have an interesting thing. You were mentioning the Spurs at one point. You know who the teams with the two worst losing streaks in the Western Conference, take out the Lakers and Kings, the two worst losing streaks, current losing streaks in the Western Conference are, with the exception of the Lakers and the Kings, are which teams?
I'm guessing the Spurs.
Yep.
They've been playing horrible ball. And
who's dropped two straight coming into that?
I have no idea.
The Blazers, exact same record, tied for second in the West. Both teams will be close to dropping out of the top few spots because of a few losses. It's unbelievable.
All right, Stats. So as we wind down the show, we've made our picks. I said 27-23 Seahawks. You said 21-20 Broncos. Do we have any idea what Dr. Jeff's going with?
Dr. Jeff posted, I'm pretty sure he said 24-20 Seahawks. And I know he had an interesting, I think, interception at the end of the game or something like that. He always gives us something interesting about the final. I know he posted on the Facebook page. By the way, I was looking up the Matt Barnes thing. I'm not sure he has I'm looking for a championship, and I don't see one.
2009-2010, what teams were...
He was on 2009-10 Orlando Magic.
Okay, so yeah, he wasn't on the Lakers for
a long. I'm not seeing a championship.
I don't know if they have a championship on that
team. So Joel Anthony has more championships than the entire Clippers roster combined.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
Just checking.
Stats, you know, I think our closing thoughts for this weekend, anything for this weekend that you're looking to, besides obviously the Super Bowl, a game, a moment, a storyline that piques your interest?
Well, we have Duke and Cuse facing off the first time at the Carrier Dome against each other. Jim Boeheim has participated in every single one of the four games between them. Started in 1966 in the NCAA tournament. Then they faced each other three times since, including 98 in the NCAA tournament as well. The other two games were neutral games as well. But Jim Boeheim was a player as the first game, assistant coach the second game, and was coaching the head coach for the last two games against each other.
Wow.
Now Mike Krzyzewski and Boeheim, 1-1 against each other all time, will face off on Saturday as Duke tries to dethrone the undefeated Orange at the Carrier
Dome.
That's
going to be an outstanding game.
Very
cool. A lot of NBA talent on those two rosters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my final thought is, you know, that today was the State of the League by Roger Goodell.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that's been talked about since we last had our show is the addition of an extra team to the playoffs. I really, really don't like it. I think that the NFL is a perfect setup. I like having two byes. The only upside the reason I don't like it is because I think it dilutes the competition. It'll make mediocrity rewarded. You're going to have a team at or below 500. There's going to be a year where they're going to make the wild card, you know, like the AFC was last year. The reason I do like it is it's going to make that one seed is now going to get a bye as opposed to 1-2, there's going to be a dogfight for that first. You're not going to mail it in knowing that you have at least have one home game, like the Patriots did.
Similar to what MLB did with the wild cards.
Yeah. No, so it's not a horrible idea. I just don't like it. So, again, you're listening to Bedtime Sports with Brad and Stats Adam. Coming to you live Fridays, 2 o'clock, for the rest of the semester. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back in a week's time. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye. Enjoy the Super Bowl.
Happy retirement, Michael Young and Big Puma.